Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person.
It's a symbol.
An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Time and again, we are encouraged to come out as atheists. Tell everybody exactly what we think and why we think it. Because the more of us there are, I think the easier it is for other people. But it's not always that simple. And that's the topic of our discussion today. I'm talking here with David McAfee. He is a journalist. He is author of Disproving Christianity and Other Secular Writings. He is a contributor to American Atheist Magazine. He has a dual degree in English and Religious Studies with an emphasis on Christianity and Mediterranean religions. Other books include Atheist Answers, No Sacred Cows, The Belief Book for Young Kids, and most recently a book called Hi, I'm an Atheist, What That Means, and How to Talk About It with Others. David McAfee, good to have you, brother.
Great to be here again. Thank you so much, Seth.
You've got a section in the book, What Does It Mean to Be an Atheist? I thought this was pretty basic. You got a whole chapter on it, so all right, you tell me. What does it mean to be an atheist?
You know, for you and I, that could simply be a two-second answer. It means somebody who doesn't believe in deities. That's really all it boils down to. But in a society where you have a lot of stigma, a lot of expectations, I wrote the chapter to kind of help explain what that means to outsiders and help new atheists explain to their family that they're not Satan worshipers, baby eaters, etc.
We still struggle with that stereotype. It seems to be getting a little bit better, but I know we're not a trusted minority, even if you can call us a minority. And you've addressed that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The studies show that atheists are sometimes less trusted than rapists and categories that would make no sense to even compare to atheism. And in terms of the stereotypes getting better, if it is, it's because more and more people are coming out as an atheist. But I still see a lot of really negative stuff, especially, you know, from the deep South areas when I'm either doing events there or just speaking with people there. So it's definitely not as good as it needs to be.
There is a clip, speaking of the deep South, of somebody, and there are several of these on the internet, of people coming out to their families, and they'll roll video or audio in the background. Now, I'm not mentioning names. I'm not giving you specifics about who these people are. So I'm not, you know, I don't want them harassed or targeted, but I do want to provide examples of how and why we are often challenged, especially in certain parts of the world, here in the United States, in the Deep South. Here's two couples. They live, I believe, in Mississippi. They came out as atheist, and there were consequences. Let me play you the clip.
This couple, we're calling them John and Jane Smith, are so afraid they asked us not to identify them. 2 years ago, they say the small Mississippi town where they lived turned against them after they complained to the principal of their son's public elementary school about class time devoted to Bible study and prayer.
We were like pariahs. Nobody would speak to us. Nobody would let their children play with my son.
The Smith story made local headlines when it was revealed that they were atheists. And soon after, tensions at the school escalated. John says members of the community even called his boss at work.
I think they called him to complain about the fact that he had brought an atheist to town.
We were absolutely isolated. People would drive by the house, park in front of our house, and stare like we were in a zoo.
Eventually, they left town altogether.
We've got a nice place to raise them. And
while some atheists try to hide their secular views, Gene and Mike Rice are atheists who've spoken out.
As an atheist, I'm the last minority that it's okay to really bash or put down.
The Rices say they've frequently encountered intolerance.
We're regularly told that we're going to hell, that we're sending our children to hell.
In the last town they lived, Jean Rice says soon after confiding her atheism to a friend, her landlord told the Rices they would have to move.
Within a few days of my telling her that we are atheist, I started hearing from other people, "Oh, are you atheist?" And it was quite shocking. And within a few weeks, our landlord gave us notice.
The Rices say they can't prove that religious discrimination was the reason they were asked to leave, but they found the timing suspicious.
Okay, so what we've got is a couple that is totally ostracized. They've got people pulling up in cars in front of their houses and staring them down. So we see a lot of people who, you know, the consequences are serious. Can you talk to me your experiences regarding consequences for coming out?
Oh, definitely. Just for starters, I want to pick up on what you just said, where discrimination happens in these gray areas, and it's absolutely true. I posted on Facebook just about a week ago about this exact same topic, just to kind of get an idea of where my readers were standing and if they had experienced any type of discrimination like this. There were people who were literally kicked out of the military right after the day after they admitted that they were an atheist in front of their superiors, but, you know, for obviously completely unrelated reasons, according to the paperwork, and from their longtime jobs, and it all followed a similar pattern where they found out, and then a couple days later, a week later, they were fired for an unrelated situation. And it's just so sad that that's still happening literally right now. For me, my experience with all of this and the reason that I originally wrote this book was because I was applying for graduate school at UCSB after graduating from the bachelor's program. And before ever submitting a formal application, had a sit down with the dean of admissions, and all she did was Google my name, David G. McAfee. The cover of my very first self-published version of Disproving Christianity popped up on the screen. I watched her see it. She turned to me and said, "I need to word this carefully, but you won't fit in with our department's milieu because you're an atheist activist with an axe to grind." And, you know, the book had nothing to do with my work at all at the school. It was literally what I did in my free time. It wasn't a part of any class, and it didn't even pick up on the same issues as I was studying at the time. So it was really, really a wake-up call that people can still enforce this type of discrimination at high levels, and there's not much we could do about it. I did get a letter of apology, but that's about the extent of it.
What do you mean apology? What did they say in the apology?
Oh, they said, we apologize for, you know, they used their typical political language. They said, I apologize for you feeling like we used your absence of religion as a justification for not letting you even apply to the program. Again, I never submitted my application. And then they followed up asking if they would like me to consider my application. And I said, no, I have no interest in working under that professor.
Here's an older clip, but this still happens. This is a guy, it's a teenager. He comes out as atheist to his Catholic mother, and things hit the fan. Let me play you the clip.
You're an atheist. Give me a fucking break, Michael. All right, you know what? We need to start going to church every week. I've had with this.
I don't believe in God.
Bullshit. You got yourself confirmed, and you said to the bishop.
Yeah, a lot can happen. You can think.
Well, a lot can happen. All of a sudden, you can just quit believing in God?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there is no God.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. You want to know there's no God? Then you're going to get absolutely nothing. Nothing for Christmas, because that's what Christmas is about, is Jesus Christ.
Okay.
No, it's not okay, Michael. It is not okay.
Okay, so the kid comes out to his Catholic mom. She wigs out, and then she tells him, you don't believe in Christ, you're getting nothing for Christmas. And of course, she's cussing him out the entire time, which I find odd. You know, she's not exactly using the language of love to draw him back into the embrace of Jesus Christ and the church. Have you seen some of these clips, David, you know, floating around on the internet? You know, people come out and they sort of reap the whirlwind kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, that's not too uncommon. And, you know, there's obviously there's some advice in the book to help de-escalate those situations, but there's no silver bullet, because this type of mentality is all too common. And I know you mentioned her cussing, and this is kind of her cussing and I would say abuse, you know, verbal abuse. I think that it's all too common with the Christian love that we hear about is more often expressed as Christian hate when it comes to disagreements. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of Christians to learn, but it's something that we can keep in mind as well as we embark on these adventures to tell people who we really are and be honest about ourselves. Like I said, there's no silver bullet, but you can always work to come out in a more pacifying way. I recommend in the book not even using the word atheist right away if you're dealing with like a fundamentalist religious individual. Maybe use some language to soften the blow. I know when I was very young, I said that I was an agnostic first, even though I did know that I was an atheist, but I just felt like that would be more palatable for my family. And it did end up helping them as I eventually did tell them I was an atheist. It helped in that transition period. Growing up in a fundamentalist Christian household, it just felt easier to me as a kid still living under their roof to kind of try to mitigate the damage to myself as well. So that's something I would recommend in these types of situations.
I mean, don't share anything you're not comfortable sharing, but walk me through that conversation. First of all, you came out of a fundy religion, is that right?
I myself was never actually religious. I'll be clear about that. I don't remember a time when I actively believed in God and Jesus, all that stuff. But my grandparents were fundamentalist Christians, Baptists, who believed in every single word of the Bible, including in later years, I would make up something to my grandma and be like, do you believe this? It's in Numbers 1:12. And I would make up the quote, and she's like, oh, if it's in there, I believe it. And so that's the type of family that I lived in. And at around 13 is when I realized that everybody in church was taking things seriously. And until then, I kind of thought that all these were just moral stories, just fables, and basically like a way to spend the morning and bond with friends, stuff like that. And when I found out by telling my grandma I wasn't going to go to church one weekend and she said that I was going to go to hell as a result, I was like, oh, that's not real, grandma. And she was like, oh, it's all real. And I was very confused by that. So that's what really led me to start letting them know, like, hey, I don't know if I believe all this, you guys. And then kind of transitioned into letting them know that I really never did believe any of it, but was kind of trying to make it easier on the rest of them.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't they freak out? You know, holy shit, where have we gone wrong? Our son just told us he no longer believes, you know?
Yeah. For my grandma, it hit the hardest when I told her that, even when I told her that I was agnostic, she was like, well, I guess at that point she was more in denial, but she did say that, you know, I'm playing with fire and I could go to hell and all this stuff. And she held on to that belief that I was just agnostic and could come back to the church in a few years. She held that belief for a couple of years. And then when I did tell everybody that, no, I never believed, I don't believe now, it was a pretty big deal. But because of that transition period, you know, she already had accepted it in the back of her mind, I think, because by then she did cry a little, but later that day we were still playing dominoes and Yahtzee and stuff. So it could have been a lot worse.
Interesting, when the grandparents are involved, a lot of people spare the grandparents because, yeah, you know, they're at the point where it's just going to rattle them. They've committed mm-hmm. to a specific belief for 60 plus years. They're this close to heaven. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, how do you advise somebody when it comes to a member of the family where they're just doing the cost benefit and saying, you know, I might just let them believe what they want to believe? Do you have a perspective on that?
Oh, yeah. That's very, very common, where in every situation like this, I do recommend that people weigh the costs and benefits. And if you're not helping anyone, you're not helping yourself, you're not helping the next generation of atheists who's trying to come out, and you're just serving to hurt someone, maybe it's not the best thing, you know. But in general, honesty is still the best policy. It's always good to be true to family. And if you feel like they can handle that and it might help in some way to maybe even strengthen your relationship or help other members of your family who might be struggling to be who they are, then it might be worth it. And in my particular case, my grandma was a very big part of my coming out as an atheist. And she was the only one who cared if I went to church in the first place, despite my whole family being religious. She was the one who really, really made it her mission to make me a Christian. And so when I wrote Disproving Christianity, started writing it in college about different biblical contradictions, it was actually to give to her, to give to my grandma and show her that the Bible isn't perfect after all.
I want to talk about cultural attitudes when it comes to our specific demographic. I'm going to pinball back a couple of years to an interview that Bill Maher had with then President Barack Obama. I know that the Trump administration has just been hideous when it comes to acknowledging non-Christians. You know what I'm saying? It's been an exclusive in-group private club, this is a Christian nation narrative. But if we look at the administration before, it was a tad more inclusive, and I want to play some comments here from then-President Obama in regard to atheists.
I don't know if anybody from my tribe of atheists ever thanked you for giving us a shout-out at your first inaugural, but you did mention non-believers.
That's right.
You, I think it was part
more than
of,
once.
More than once.
I mean, it's not just in that speech. I've done it often.
Well, we appreciate it. Because we do feel like untouchables to a degree. I mean, I don't know if you saw the latest religion survey, but almost a quarter of the country are nuns. I don't mean the ones who hit me on the knuckles with a ruler in Sunday school. I mean, they put none for religion.
None of the above.
Right. They're not. No, they're atheists, agnostics, yeah. Or they just don't want to get up on Sunday morning. And we have no representation in Congress. If our numbers were represented, there'd be over 100 Congress people who felt that way.
Right.
It just seems like we are not included in the basket of diversity in America, which is odd because we are the biggest minority. That is a bigger minority than any other minority you can name. Don't you think we should get a little more love?
I guess my question would be whether there is active persecution of atheists. I think that there are certain...
Well...
I think for
lack
a
of
candidate, I think you're right, that there are certain
we might be
occupations,
more scientific.
Probably most prominently politics, where there would be a bias against somebody who's agnostic or atheist in running for office. I think that's still true. Outside of that arena, though, you seem to have done all right with your TV show. I don't get a sense. To the extent that they're boycotting you, it's because of your other wacky ideas rather than your particular view on religion.
Whatever other wacky idea.
I usually agree with you. I think the average American, if they go to the workplace, somebody's next to them, they're not poking around trying to figure out what their religious beliefs are. Here's what I would say, that I think that we should foster a culture in which people's private religious beliefs, including atheists and agnostics, are respected. And that's the kind of culture that I think allows all of us then to believe what we want. That's freedom of conscience. That's what our Constitution guarantees. Where we get into problems typically is when our personal religious faith or the community of faith that we participate in tips into a sort of fundamentalist extremism in which it's not enough for us to believe what we believe, but we start feeling obligated to, hit you over the head because you don't believe the same thing, or to treat you as somebody who's less than I am.
But we might be more pro-science in America if we were less religious, don't you think?
Well, I think the issues we have with science these days are not restricted to what's happening with respect to religion. There are a lot of very religious scientists around. I think the problem is that in our school systems, and to some degree, and this is where it is relevant, with school boards around the country that are mandating curriculums and textbooks, you start seeing this weird watering down of scientific fact so that our kids are growing up in an environment, and this connects to what I was saying earlier about the media, where everything's contested, that nothing is true, because if it's on Facebook, it all looks the same. And if you're reading something from a Nobel Prize winning physicist next to some guy in his underwear, writing in his basement, or his mom's basement, on text, it looks like it's equally plausible. And part of what we have to do a better job of, if our democracies function in a complicated, diverse society like this, is to teach our kids enough critical thinking to be able to sort out what is true and what is false, what is contestable and what is incontestable. We seem to have trouble with that. And our political system doesn't help.
Okay, lots to unpack here. First of all, I have my series of challenges with Bill Maher. Occasionally, he dives into pseudoscience. He's got some wacky ideas out there. But, he is and I like the movie Religious, even though he got some of the comparisons with Christ and previous gods wrong. I was wincing when he did those. But, he is a frontline atheist, and the reason I wanted to play that is because what we've got is an in-depth exchange about atheist Americans with the person who holds the most powerful office in the land. And Obama was, to a degree, being a politician, but, he was speaking the language of inclusivity. And then he says to Bill Maher, well, are atheists persecuted here? I mean, you're doing okay. Big show, a lot of money. But I don't think Bill Maher is really a great case study in the life of the everyday atheist.
I would completely agree with that. It seems like actually a surprisingly tone-deaf remark from Obama, considering that we can't judge any persecuted minority based on the success of one individual.
Would you agree with Bill Maher that atheists tend to be more pro-science? I know this is a leading question, right? But Come on, if we're going to embrace science in this country, there's a specific demographic that tends to lean more that direction.
Yes, of course. Yeah, the statistics show that that's true. But, you know, then you have the atheists who think that every single other atheist is going to be pro-science. And so they end up with some false information there, too. So I tend to specify when talking about this issue that it's definitely nowhere near 100% and that we have a lot of work to do in our community, especially, you know, there are a lot of anti-vax atheists. There are even a lot of Trump voter atheists. There are a lot of these people that don't fit in with the most common, and because the only similarity is that we lack belief in deities. That's it. So if you came to that conclusion from a scientific mindset, you're more likely to be pro-science. If you came to that conclusion because you were born in an atheist family, maybe, then that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with your scientific outlook.
Yeah, but I mean, is that an atheist-humanist discussion? I mean, you mentioned it. There's a wide spectrum. You can be an atheist and you can vote whatever. I've met flat earth atheists. I've met atheists
exactly,
that believe in ghosts, all that, right?
Exactly. So the pro-science atheist stereotype is a true in a statistical form, but it's nowhere near a universal because of that.
Are there atheist arguments that make you crazy whenever they're dealing with the religious, whether we're talking about coming out or something else? I mean, you know, you've written a lot about it. You're a religious studies guy. What's your take?
Yeah. I hear stuff all the time that bothers me. Some of the minor stuff that I don't even like to bring up because it's so nitpicky. But since we're talking about Bill Maher, I want to bring it up. I think his quote is that atheism is like a religion, like off as a TV channel or something like that, something to that effect. And the comparison just isn't directly true because there are a lot of atheists who are religious. There are even atheistic religions, various forms of Buddhism and Taoism and all kinds of traditions that don't require deities but are in fact religions complete with temples and monks and even supernatural beliefs in other ways. So the direct correlation to being like an off TV channel doesn't quite work, but I also understand the intent. And so I've even posted something similar before just as a joke. But if we're getting nitpicky, that doesn't quite work as an analogy.
Yeah. What about the argument that all babies are born atheist? You deal with that?
Yeah. And in my book, In High I'm an Atheist, I do allude to that by saying that we're all born atheists and would continue as such without indoctrination into religions. But the way that I phrase it is very specific because a lot of people, you know, imply that a baby has that sort of agency, and that's just not true. Like, it can't choose whether it believes in anything. And whether that is a technical definition of an atheist, it probably is, you know, it doesn't believe in any deities. But to clasp on to that logic then leads, now a rock is an atheist. You know, it really doesn't help our side at all to make that argument.
We like to trip over the pebbles, don't we? I mean, with all of these big picture things, the Christian nationalists are going crazy. Conspiracy theories are everywhere. And we're screaming at each other on Twitter over the minutiae. You know, it's like I become frustrated sometimes with my fellow activists. And I've been guilty from time to time of jumping down a bunny trail and becoming distracted. But you ever feel exasperated when you see with all the work that's got to be done and all the shit that we snipe at each other over?
Definitely. Yeah, it's a community of activists who are very passionate about what they believe. And a lot of people, you know, with different other beliefs other than the God question. And so it's bound to lead to this kind of thing. But also, I definitely find it exasperating. And it's something that I think, like you said, it's better just to focus on the most important aspects of all these questions.
More with David McAfee, author of the book, Hi, I'm an Atheist, What That Means and How to Talk About It with Others. Our conversation continues after this.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry,
sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you so much for listening and thanks for your support at patreon.com/Seth Andrews. If you're a patron, you get the show early and totally commercial free. patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Continuing our conversation with author David McAfee. He just released the book, Hi, I'm an Atheist, What That Means and How to Talk About It with Others. Here's a tough one. Spouses. All right, two people get together. They are churchgoers. They are of like belief. They have children, and they want to raise their children in the faith. And then one spouse begins deconstruction and ends up a non-believer. And the wife or husband feels like that the rug has been pulled out from underneath them. Do you deal with religious spouses in your book?
Yes, there's an entire chapter on coming out to religious spouses, because this is actually, you've touched on the most common question that I ever get related to coming out as an atheist. In fact, there are about 5 unread messages in my fan page inbox that I just saw this morning, like as we've been on this call, for people asking similar questions about coming out to their boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. It's a very tough one because there's a lot riding on it. But the light at the end of the tunnel there is that almost, I would say 60, 65% of the couples that I've dealt with in the book and doing interviews and everything, they ended up where it went better than they thought. Even to the extent that in a lot of cases, one person would admit that, oh, hey, I've been having doubts about religion for a long time. I hope you still love me, etc. And then a lot of times it's surprising, but they'll be like, wow, I've actually been having some questions too. Or even, oh my God, I've been scared to tell you I'm an atheist. That's actually very common, where they've both been hiding it from each other, hiding their doubts from each other for some time. And then it's actually a very cathartic experience to eventually just tell each other how they feel.
Yeah, it gets tricky though with the kids, right? I want to raise my child in church. And the other one says, I don't want my kids to be indoctrinated. And before you know it, it's a tug of war. The kid's caught in the middle. How would you approach that, David?
Believe it or not, in most of these cases, even when there's a vehement disagreement about the religion itself, the husband and wife partners that I've spoken with have all been able to come to a compromise when it comes to children. And frankly, that ends up benefiting the non-believer in most cases, because they will usually say, okay, we'll wait till the kid is a little bit older, till they've developed a little bit more understanding of the world around them before we put them in this church. And that's the general compromise. And the longer that you wait to expose a kid to that type of thing, the less likely it is that they're going to take it super seriously. So that's something that I recommend often, is just waiting a little bit till they have a little more agency and understanding of the situation.
If I can jump in too, I think there's utility in making sure that the child is not thrown to the wolves, right? Be there to supervise and give some context, right? You know what? I know a lot of people.
Oh, yes.
And churches will do this. They're like, hey, drop the kids off. We're going to send a bus out through the community. And the parents are like, oh, great. We get a couple of hours to ourselves. And, oh, they're going to have snacks and lunch for the kids and toys and playtime. So they just sort of send their children off without really knowing
what the churches are doing.
That happened to you?
That's the church I went to. Yep, that's the exact situation of my church experience growing up. I rode the bus. We sang songs on the way. I got candy for singing the loudest. It was like my favorite experience was going to church, because I'd get a little vacation from my bad childhood, bad home life. I'd get out and get to sing with people, get candy and food, and they had Bible bucks. Like if I answered questions right, I would get a little Jesus dollar that I could get for get toys and time on the trampoline in the back of the church. These are true facts.
Trampoline time and Jesus bucks. That's beautiful. You know, for the non-believer, I mean, I don't know if you can get a believing spouse to go for this, but isn't there huge utility in comparative religions? Look, All right, fine. I'd like to take them to the Christian church. Well, you know, I'd like to take them to a Muslim mosque, or let's go over here to the Buddhist temple and let's try all this. I'd like to be able to show them, you know, because what's that line? If you teach a child one religion, you indoctrinate them. If you teach them all religions, you inoculate them. It's not a perfect argument, but comparative religions, it's huge for a lot of apostates or those deconstructing.
It is. Literally, that's my life. That's my story. That's my studies. That's my entire goal, is to get more and more people to learn about religions themselves. That's what I did with the belief book, Book of Gods and Book of Religions, to help kids understand where religions come from, how they grew. I firmly believe, and I believe this based on statistics, that the more people who learn about religions from a phenomenological approach as young kids, as kids in high school, the less likely they are to be religious, yes, but most importantly, that makes them less likely to be religious extremists. And that's just based on facts. When you look at how they do religious education in places in Europe where the religious, the religious numbers are way down, almost everyone's an atheist because they all understand how the basic religions work, and indoctrination can't really overcome that type of education easily.
Do you put any stock in non-theistic religions? I always mention the Satanic Temple, but, you know, ritual religion without the supernatural?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people really need that type of thing in their life. Religion itself evolved out of human necessity. I know a lot of people believe that it was created in order to control people, but it actually was created out of human curiosity, wanting to know where the world came from, where the water comes from, all these things. They started off with these questions, and then it was eventually harnessed and used to control people. But religion itself is very natural. Every single society has some form of religion or superstition or tradition, ritual, etc. And so for a lot of atheists who have left that, they especially need something. So they, you know, they could join a non-theistic religion. They could even go to the Unitarian Church. They can go to the Sunday atheist services that exist out there. I know the Oasis groups do some of those. So that is definitely an important part of human culture. And, you know, I don't personally need that in my life. And I don't have any, I have enough rituals with my obsessive compulsive disorder. But I do see how that has value for other non-believers.
You know, it gets frustrating because it's one of the reasons I think that we in the non-believing community need to do a better job of community, right? We're asking people walk away from their faith, but it's not just about the belief. They got this whole structure that's on the bubble. And what are we offering? Do we have gatherings? Do we have people? Do we have support groups? And we tend to resist a lot of that. Well, I left one herd. I'm not going to join another herd. And I think, you know, aren't we communal creatures? Aren't we surrendering to the church something that human beings do naturally?
Definitely. That's an important part of the book, too. The Establishing a New Sense of Community chapter is all about how, for a lot of people, you know, some people, their entire lives revolve around their religion, their school, their work, everything is religion-centric. And when they leave that, they really do need, like, another community, a serious group of people to talk to. They don't have anyone else in their life at that point. A lot of them are even excommunicated or completely cut off from their families. And so it becomes increasingly important that we do have some sort of community aspect. And in the book, I list a lot of resources and groups and stuff, but there's definitely a lot more work we can do on that.
You mentioned the Unitarians when it comes to community. I've of two minds when it comes to the Unitarians. I came out as an atheist in a Unitarian church. There was a conference there, you know, and they're wide open. They're, hey, you're welcome. All the ideas are welcome. Come and be welcome. And they were absolutely fantastic. But then I get frustrated because I feel like their minds are so open that their brains fall out. Like they'll allow anybody in the world to come and present the idea, and the ideas apparently are treated equally or almost equally. And
I had a Unitarian Universalist minister on years ago, and I was like, do you ever have somebody who walks into your Unitarian church who has a wacky idea, and you're prepared to say, actually, that is scientifically, historically, morally wrong? Are you prepared to draw a line? And they wouldn't answer the question. You know, that's a lively question. That's something to be considered. We should talk more about that, you know. So, I mean, I took a bunny trail there on the Universalists. But I do appreciate the fact that they have community and they do a lot of the stuff that people enjoy, and they are inclusive by nature.
Yeah, I actually haven't had that much experience with them, so that's an interesting little tidbit for me to learn about them.
I mean, you know, if you walk in and you're a flat earther and they're like, oh, all opinions and perspectives are welcome, we're an open table, I appreciate the inclusivity of it, but at some point, is it true is a question that has to come in to the picture, which takes us back to the challenges against religion. Do you get into role-playing at all, practicing? I've told people, you know, hey, hammer it out. You're driving alone in your car. Do a situational when no one's peering into the window and seeing you talk to yourself. But if you say this, what would they say? And if they say that, how would you respond? You get into role-playing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I recommend that. And then the next step above that would be random online communications. You know, if you know somebody who isn't as close to you as an immediate family member, you can practice by talking to them and see how that goes. And then the next step from there is to find somebody within your family who you think will be helpful and on your side, or at least more understanding than the worst people in your family, and go from there. And so it's all about building up to what you need to do. And yeah, going over that situation in your head is definitely helpful.
You know, a previous book that you did targeted to younger people, the Belief Book. Someone might argue you're just trying to preach atheism. You're trying to program little atheists. How would you respond to that?
That's the most common argument that I get for that book. And it's really funny because the book was never meant and isn't a guide to making your kid an atheist or anything. I think there are books out there like that. But the Belief Book was actually based on my religious studies education, where I really wanted to get kids a firm understanding of what religions are, where they come from, yes, a secular academic approach, but boiled down to a form that kids can understand. And so I don't even think the Belief Book mentions the word atheist or atheism, which makes it even funnier when people say that I'm trying to program their kids to believe in atheism or whatever they say. I do eventually, in I think Book of Gods and or Book of Religions, I mention atheism in going through the other belief systems, but it's more of an educational tool. And if the facts lend themselves to atheism, that's not really my fault.
I mean, I think so, too. If you follow the scientific evidence, I mean, I'm of the perspective that you're probably going to end up not believing in gods. But you don't start with the answer with a capital A. You don't decide and then go out and find confirming evidence. You're a genuine seeker after truth. Belief over knowledge, right? Christopher Hitchens once said it's called faith because it's not knowledge. I always thought that was a great line.
Yeah, I like that too.
All right, so somebody's on the bubble. I don't believe, or I'm doubting, or I'm having real problems with my faith or former faith. Mom and dad may cast me off. My siblings may freak out. My boss may penalize me or even find an excuse to fire me. I don't know what the future holds. I'm not even sure who I am anymore. That person is listening. What would you say? What encouragement would you have for them?
You know, that's where we all start. That's a feeling that we all know all too well. And so the words of encouragement are just to hang in there, because we've all been there. We've all done the work to get out of that. And now we're all living better lives than we were before. If you ask any of those people who were sharing stories about discrimination, atheist discrimination, and you ask how they're doing these days, almost all of them are surrounded by loving, caring people, because they made the work to put the people in their lives who need to be in their lives. And that's the advice I'd recommend.
Sometimes family is the family you choose. I mean, if someone has a conditional love, agree with me or else I will reject you, you have to maybe redefine what your family is, and you have to decide, was that a true friend in the first place?
Absolutely. That's incredibly important to remember in these situations.
David McAfee, author of Hi, I'm an Atheist, what that means and how to talk about it with others. I will link to the book and your site in the description box of the show. All success with it. I think it's going to help a lot of people. And thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.